Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
Welcome back to Bad Movies Rule. We've done just about 20 episodes here, and we've had to sit through some pretty terrible movies. But it's okay. I like the pain. I like the misery. And today we're talking about 1989's Cyborg. Let's go. Why are you shaking your head already?
Fender, dude. That bad guy, yeah, Fender, dude, was awesome. And I think right off the bat, memorable quote, real quick.
I hate water.
I legitimately watched this movie for the first 25 minutes trying to figure out who the bad guy was. It wasn't clear to me.
Oh, really?
Really?
No, that's not true.
It was so obvious.
Eyes. Ridiculously obvious right off the front. Okay, there's the bad guy.
Way before they even introduced the star of the film. So as you can tell, we are joined this morning by Mr. Clint Bush. How are you this morning, Clint?
I'm pretty okay.
Yeah?
Yeah. Feeling good? I'm feeling fantabulous.
Did you get enough sleep last night?
I probably did not.
Okay.
We'll get through that.
You look good.
I always look good. Thanks, Bob. You look great, too.
Last time I was here, I've been sitting in the B seat over there, so it's nice to see you.
You got an upgrade.
I did get an upgrade back to the street fighter position.
Yeah, this is the first time we've had only three people on here in a long time. You can hear Bob Hauser's with us also this morning. Bob, how are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm very sorry that I'm late. I apologize. Lost track of time this morning.
They didn't know you were late. We could have just,
But now everybody knows you were late.
We're waiting on Bob.
I was late.
And I'm your host, James Hauser. And, this morning I'm feeling pretty good. This is a movie that I've been wanting to talk about for a while.
This is definitely a James Hauser movie.
It 100% is.
So he actually likes this movie?
He does.
Messing with me?
No, he actually does like it.
Okay. Here's what I'll say before we dive in. And I'll explain myself in a moment after we talk to the listener. This is the greatest movie ever made.
This whole episode, the three of us came in and recorded just for you, listener.
That's right. And listener, if you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts, would you do me a favor this morning and drop us a review? In fact, any of you who are listening on Apple Podcasts, that helps us rise up the rankings in Apple, the more reviews we have. And so if you could go on there, drop us 5 stars, drop us a line about what you guys think about the show, that would be great. Otherwise, if you're not on Apple Podcasts, that's okay. You can continue listening to us wherever you find us, man. And if that platform allows for a review, drop us a review. Otherwise, you can follow up with the show if you want to connect with us at facebook.com/badmoviesrule. And if you've got some feedback for the show, if you want to shoot us a very long, long hate mail, you can send that to thisshowistrash@gmail.com. We definitely will read it, and maybe we'll even read it on the show if it's bad enough.
We'll also take fan
mail. Please send
us
bad mail. I want to hear it. I want someone to tell me that I stink.
That's right. Let's get the vitals of this movie out of the way real quick before we start diving in, because I can tell you guys already have a lot to say about this. This movie, Cyborg 1989, was written and directed, and I know I'm going to say this guy's name wrong, because it's one of those weird names that's got a consonant in the wrong place.
Prune juice.
No, Albert Pyun. I'm going to say it's P-Y-U-N.
I just called him Prune Juice.
Prune Juice. All right, Albert Prune Juice wrote and directed this film. He did both, pulled double duty. This guy is like, if you look at his filmography, a B-movie guy, right? I mean, he literally has a movie on his filmography called Bullet Face.
Why have we not watched this movie yet?
This is next week on Bad Movies Rule.
Why have we not watched this movie yet?
Honestly,
it's got all the elements of a Bad Movies Rule. One, it exists.
Every time Bob and I, start talking about some dumb movies we should make ourselves, we always make up these most ridiculous titles for action films,
yes,
right?
Yes, we do.
And when I saw Bullet Face on this guy's filmography, I thought, that sounds like a name that Bob Hauser would come up with to name.
That's awesome. I haven't even watched it, and you're already awesome.
Yeah. So This definitely was the peak of his career as far as commercially successful. But the rest of it was a string of very... I mean, just if you want to laugh, go look at Albert Pyun's P-Y-U-N. Look at his filmography and just have a laugh at the different titles and movies that this guy has directed. It's great.
What was he before? Was he... Before he was a director, was he like a second director?
I'm assuming he must have been. He didn't just roll out of bed and someone said, "Hey, here's Cyborg, direct this."
Well, cocaine was involved. Everybody rolled out of bed.
Oh my gosh!
Why is everything cocaine in the 80s? With you weren't even alive in the 80s.
I haven't been here.
No, but in this case, I think almost everybody probably was doing coke in this movie.
especially Fender. It filled up his eyeballs.
Absolutely. The movie starred, as you say, Jean-Claude Van Damme as Gibson Rickenbacker. The names in this movie are fantastic, by the way. And Vincent Klein. I think it's Klein is how you say it. And Vincent Klein played Fender Tremolo or Tremulu?
Tremalio, I don't know.
Tremalio, something. But yeah, essentially Gibson and Fender are the two main characters of this movie, and they're both named after guitars. That should just tell you everything about what you know.
They are.
Yeah.
Which I found out through Wikipedia because I was trying to find memorable quotes because I couldn't find any. And
so you're trying to stock up for top five quotes.
It's hard to find memorable quotes in a movie that legitimately probably averages about five words a minute throughout the whole thing.
I realized that. There are probably
only 350 words spoken in this whole movie.
No, you're right. Van Damme speaks in like four word sentences in and this movie.
But he lets his feet do the talking for him.
But there's a lot of...
Yeah, well, that's a kind of a B-movie trick. Well, smart B-movie directors do that. They keep their dialogue to a minimum because they know the script is not good.
Yeah.
If the script isn't good, I love dialogue. I love long dialogue movies.
But me this too. Movie did not
this
have
did
any...
This did not have any of that.
Which was very hard because I'm like, I'm going to be so unprepared tomorrow.
So I already said, I dropped the gauntlet. This is... I was... You know, half kidding. It's not the greatest movie of all time, but I don't care what anybody says. This movie is good as hell. Sometimes we sit and we watch these films, and it's been a while since we'd seen them, right? We saw them in our childhood, and we carry with us sort of an emotional attachment to these films that had more to do with when we saw them than whether or not they were good.
Yeah.
And so we come back and we watch them, and we're like, oh, this doesn't hold up. This movie holds up. The whole time I was watching, I was like, wait a second. Is this movie actually awesome? Because... I did not hate it when I watched it. What were your guys' overall impressions of the film?
My overall impression of the film now is that my buddy James is insane.
Was this your daughter approval? Did she approve this movie?
Did not approve this. She literally, as they first start hacking heads off of people, walked out of the room and said, "Yeah, I'm done with this one. Totally uninterested." Again, that's just our type of movie that we watch in our house. We don't get down with the more gory stuff.
You know? Bob, what's your overall impression?
This is actually, funny enough, my second time seeing this movie.
That's it?
That's it.
I think you got me beat by one. 100% more watching than I have done.
You didn't... You, the purveyor of Van Damme cinema.
I owned it, and I remember watching it. I bought it. I don't think I watched it when I was a kid.
And I hope not. It's actually pretty violent.
I think I saw clips of it, because maybe you watched it, and I didn't really know what was going on.
Yeah.
So, but I bought the MGM DVD when it first came out in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And I watched it when I bought it. I was on a Van Damme kick, no pun intended back then. I was just buying all his movies and stuff. And I watched it. I remember liking it. And I haven't seen it up until last
night. Wow. I'm amazed by that. I've seen this movie so many times. Not in a long time, but so many times.
But I would agree with you. It is really well done.
It slaps.
It reminds me of a little... Escaped from New York-ish.
Yeah, kind of.
Like the camera angle.
Which was also super low budget.
Yeah.
You really didn't like this movie, Clint?
I truly found everything in my living room more interesting.
Oh, my God.
Like, legitimately, I didn't realize we had some art hanging on the wall. My wife has decorated, and I wasn't
paying attention.
You probably would
have liked it better if Vanilla Ice was in it.
No, I just, in general, it just wasn't interesting. There was nothing wrong with it at all. I mean, I watch it. It's not my style of movie. I don't watch those type of movies in general.
Okay.
Now, it's action, sure, but it's not the kind of action movies we watch. I like explosion action movies and stuff. I think the problem is, even if you look at this movie, it's Van Damme's gun has four barrels and four shots. He shoots it four times and it's out of ammo. It's too realistic. That's why I didn't like
this movie. It was probably one of his most realistic films, which I kind of enjoyed. I go, wow, he ran out of ammo.
Yeah.
Well, none of them had an actual like gun as is, you know, traditional. It looked like they were firing like, were they like bolt guns or something like that, right? I mean, like, they were kind of weird.
Yeah, they were very weird. And even like the, it wasn't really that gory.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it wasn't that
gory. No, it's not like gory, but it's just one of those,
but it was like
it's grittier.
Yeah, very gritty. The second he goes to lop one guy's head off,
he
cuts as the head starts doing this, and then cuts to another shot.
Sure.
Because
they don't actually show the...
Right, they don't actually show because they didn't have the budget to have heads roll everywhere.
Well, here's the thing. I think this actually worked in their favor, okay? Not having the budget. So... How many movies have we watched and we've joked around about they can't afford it, right? This is why there's no extras in the movie, or this is why the CGI monster looks so terrible, and I mean because they slashed the budget because of Harrison Ford from Deep Rising. This is a great example of how you make an awesome movie with no money.
It is.
Okay? Right. Yeah, there's some not everything in this movie is great. The script is weak. Mm-hmm. Okay. The story isn't weak. It's a story everybody can appreciate and follow. Revenge, right?
Yeah.
But the scripting as in the dialogue is weak. The acting is not great. There's a couple people that do really great, but there's some people that legitimately look like they'd never done a film or anything before in their life saying lines of dialogue in this movie. That's not a strong suit. But man, he took what he had, considering the budget for this movie was $500,000. That's it. That's probably the lowest one yet of all the ones we've talked about.
This was right after Bloodsport for Van Damme.
Right.
And that movie was a multi-million. That budget, I think, was it like $5 or $6 million for Bloodsport?
Yeah, and so you take this $500,000 and you had fantastic camera work, right?
Very good.
I mean,
yes.
Very creative camera work. The tone of the movie, like just this general sense of dread and menace is present throughout the entire film.
This is a Joe Kortowski film.
Oh, I'm sure he probably would have loved this movie. Yeah. I don't know if he's seen it.
The costumes and just the look of the film, this is a Joe Kortowski film.
But when you have no money, you have to rely on photography, intensity, tone, and picking the right locations because you can't like create a future dystopia. So you have to find things that look and then maybe throw a bunch of junk and garbage in there. All that was done phenomenal for the money. This movie made $10 million off of a $500,000 budget in the box office.
Very big success.
So that's a huge success. They doubled their money 20 times. Mm.
So I feel like this movie was not a bad movie like that and therefore shouldn't be qualified, so we shouldn't have to talk about it
anymore. Well, it meets the other qualification.
You know, it's funny. I think this is the first time we're actually speaking positive about the movie.
The IMDb rating is 5.1. It's almost in the fours. This is not a well-reviewed movie.
I don't agree with that.
People think this movie stinks, and we're here to say this is a bad movie that rules.
I know what this is. You guys are looking at this movie from a production standpoint and how good it is, like actually how much they did with what they have. I just think that in general, most people, more like me, weren't as interested. Short attention span. You got long swaths of nothing really happening. Yeah, there's something happening.
The atmosphere, though, I feel like it's a movie you just like, even when nothing's happening, they've created such a great atmosphere you can soak in it the entire time.
Yeah. But I could see Clint's point of view too, where it's like when nothing's happening, that's when the audience starts to go like,
that's what I'm saying. There's enough
my laundry.
There's enough nothing happening to where you look at your phone for a half a moment and then you miss the part that did happen.
Right.
Fair enough.
Which happened to me last night. There was one thing I was like, oh, I'm gonna look at
I had to go back and rewatch the end.
Here's what's gonna happen. We're gonna build the case. And hopefully by the end, we've convinced you. And I don't know, you're like halfway between me and Clint, I feel like. We're going to build the case of why this is a bad movie that rules.
Okay.
This movie's awesome. So let's just jump in. Okay.
All right.
Now, a word of warning. This is definitely an R-rated movie. So those of you who are watching that are listening that have never seen it and are going to go, oh, maybe I should go watch this movie. Be warned. There's some stuff in this movie that are definitely not for children. So
yes.
Be careful with who you have in the room with you when you choose to watch Cyborg. Let's talk about it. So first, the scenes that must be discussed. I feel like this is a Van Damme movie. And so the scenes that we have to talk about are the scenes where Van Damme is Van Damming.
Yes. I got one of these.
All right. What's the scene that must be discussed?
The scene that must be discussed. Are we kind of going in order?
Yeah, if we can.
Over the place?
No. All right.
Then I have a scene that must be discussed in six scenes.
You're talking about the flashbacks?
No, the flashbacks was, okay. I mean,
I thought you meant six scenes where they cut back to it six times. No, go ahead.
Yeah, the flashback was another thing. You say they're stretching a budget, and yeah. I totally see that now looking at it. But I'm like, seriously, yeah. These guys recorded this one thing all the way through, and then they used this 10 minutes montage that they've done for 34 minutes.
Because yeah.
They showed us 3 minutes of it, and then they showed us 5 minutes of it, and then they showed us 7 minutes of it.
But I actually think that worked because every time it was like revealing a mystery and you're like, what happened to these people? What did Fender do? And well, first of all, you don't even really know that it was Fender until they've shown you enough where they see him sitting in the window, yeah. Which was super creepy, by the way, after they had just got done making out and they're just laying
in another moonlight makeout.
Yeah. Van Damme loves these. It's the same thing in Time Cop.
It's a Van Damme trope.
I started this movie and yeah. We got into it a little bit and my wife was sitting there. My daughter was sitting with me for like 5-7 minutes or mm-hmm. so of this thing too, and I'm like, at some point in this movie he's going to be nearly naked and glistening in the moonlight. Watch. No joke, happened.
Yeah, twice. So for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, there is a series of flashbacks throughout the film where Van Damme is a character named Gibson who's what they call a slinger. And so what these guys do, according to Albert Pion in the lore, he almost made a slinger movie, is these are guys that basically are paid to transport regular people from A to B and protect them from pirates and raiders and all of these things. Right. Mm-hmm. And so in this series of flashbacks, we follow Van Damme's character Gibson as he escorts this woman and her two children or children or younger siblings. I can't tell, but we'll just say children. Know. Doesn't matter. And then eventually, you know, falls in love with her and stays with them instead of just doing the transaction, escorting them and then leaving. So just so right. People know. Yeah. But there's a little more shown every, and they flash back to this a lot.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like 9 different times.
Every time he falls asleep.
Or sometimes when he's just like sharpening a knife.
Right.
For 10 minutes. Like, and even in the flashback, they keep flashing back to the knife sharpening. I'm like, wait, why do we have to make sure, just so you all know, he's still there sharpening his knife. I didn't want you guys to think we'd forgotten about his knife being sharpened.
I think that gives you a little bit of the, this guy is aware of his surroundings, even though he's, you know, completely daydreaming off right now.
What'd you think of Van Damme's wig in the flashbacks?
I texted you this last night. So flashback wig, I'm at peace. Flash forward to Van Damme's hair, I'm at war.
So there's peacetime hair.
There's peacetime hair.
And wartime hair.
Yeah, he came up with the peacetime hair before Kurt Cobain.
He looks ridiculous.
He does. The bangs hanging.
Oh, my gosh. Grace, my oldest daughter, says when it cuts back to him for like the second time with the bangs.
What does she have to say?
She just goes, oh, those bangs are not it.
Why is she not on the show?
It looks ridiculous.
Oh, my God. It did. I was laughing because I'm like, every time they throw it, they didn't nail the Van Damme wig until Hard Target.
Well, and you're right. Oh, God, he's got an epic wig and Hard Target. Every time, and it even seems like he, halfway through the flashback, got tired of the wig, too, because it's just gone.
It started kind of makeshift. And then when it came time to what actually happened to...
Yeah, when Fender.
With Fender and what actually happened to the people he was protecting, he has the spike hair.
That's what I'm saying. I think he just got tired of wearing the wig.
I'm like, where's his long hair?
He just took it off.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like... This is not it. I'm not wearing this.
Not wearing this anymore.
Not wearing this. I can't do a French accent.
Don't challenge me.
And yeah, but it's okay. But as funny as these flashbacks are, and this, the woman that plays.
Yes, they're hilarious.
If you put George Michael soundtrack in the background, they're 10 times. They're funny.
Okay, gotcha.
The woman that plays the girl that he falls in love with is probably the worst actress in this movie.
She looked like a Angelina Jolie.
Right, but every line of dialogue she says terrible. Is terrible.
No, yeah, she was absolutely terrible.
And they do almost no character development to set the... I mean, I know they got to do it in flashback. They don't have a ton of time. But just like some kind of connection between the two of them that says... Because she goes from, you're just like the pirates, you suck, you're terrible.
Right.
To, moonlight. I love you.
Yeah, to the moonlight.
When she says to the ridiculous scene where he's sitting there with the two kids laying in his lap while they're sleeping, right? And she just says, you're good with them.
Oh, God.
I like them. And then they love each other. That's it. That's all the development they put into the whole thing.
Oh, my God.
This is a case of when you've got a great actor
mm-hmm.
and somebody to act against, you get a elevated performance. Yeah. They didn't have either of those.
They didn't have Van Damme wasn't going to pull it out.
Backwards as well.
I hear you. That's true. Probably a good point. But I think in the end, the flashbacks worked because when they finally reveal what Fender did to these people, so Fender is the leader of the pirates that's played by Vincent Klein. He's the main bad guy.
Very well done.
He shows up, and it seems like for Fender throughout the movie that anywhere he goes, he just kills everybody.
Yeah, like the, right. When he obviously intercepts the cyborg.
Or right.
After he... Can we go back to the beginning for a second?
Yeah.
Van Damme's first introduction into the film.
Yeah.
He kicks somebody in the... It's like the...
Yeah.
It's the leg across the screen.
Right, right. The classic Van Damme.
And then Fender shows up, does something, and manages to explode Van Damme into a wall of rubble.
Yeah, right. How did he not die?
Takes the cyborg.
Yeah.
And then 2 seconds later, fire fist punch. An explosion of rubble everywhere.
Yes, it was very anime. Yes. 2 seconds on the screen, but it had become nighttime because they started playing the cricket noise.
Yes.
To let you know some time has gone by. But yeah, he just took a nap under the rubble for a while before he popped out.
Yeah. I just like the exploding fist out of the rubble.
It's perfect.
But again, you got this guy, Fender, who kills everything, cuts heads off, makes sure is dead. But no. Yeah, that's good enough. He's fine.
Didn't he kill a teenager? I think like he grabbed one and just
pulled their head off.
Practically. Yeah, like, whoa, okay.
It was crazy. But he basically takes Van Damme. This is in the flashback. This is setting up why Van Damme is trying to track down Fender.
Yeah. Right?
That he wrapped him and his girlfriend and one of the kids in barbed wire.
Right. Suspended them in the well.
Suspended them over a well and then made the other little girl
hold on to the
barbed wire. And it's like, if you can hold on to this, then they'll live.
Right. Which that was so sick delivered.
Sadistic.
Yeah.
And as far as effective for the movie, fantastic.
Yes.
I thought that really worked really well, even though it's really twisted.
It's very twisted, and it was the line of dialogue that, like, Vincent Klein said, like, if you can hold them, they'll live.
Right.
But then that girl becomes Fender's, you know, little toy.
That's what these guys do, man. When they go from town to town and place to place. They kidnap people and eventually indoctrinate them into
their cult.
Their cult, and... You know, think of it like the Manson family or any of these things that's depicted in films where, you know, over amount of time, prisoners become part of the group. They fall in love with their captors and made to be subservient, and that's it. Yeah.
It's messed up.
So he takes the little girl, assuming the other three are now dumped down the well.
Right.
And she eventually, you know, becomes his girlfriend.
But then, they go to the bottom and there's some water, but not a ton. Van Damme is able to get out and has the strength to crawl up and out of there.
Yeah.
Why did he not, like,
free she was the dead. Others?
But how? They were
alive. They fell down a well. I mean, they never say how deep it is, how far it is. Yeah, because he's Jean-Claude Van Damme. Yeah. You think you're going to kill him dropping him down a well? You could have dropped him down a well, exploded the well, and all of the rocks and stones fell down, and he would have just... Fire punched,
fire fisted, exploded the well. And I the just house feel next
that three human beings that fall, the same distance into the same environment, will probably have similar ability to survive. Yet he was still strong enough to climb out of the well, and the other two died.
Well, the guy's like the one kid was like six.
He's right.
He's the that muscles kid should have Brussels,
really
man.
Survived.
That's right. He's the muscles from Brussels.
Kids are made out of rubber. They fall down. I mean, it's going to take us 6 months to recover.
Please don't try this with your kid.
what if they landed on him? I mean, there was Van Damme's 200 pounds, and then
that's probably what happened too. It's probably why he's so enraged. He probably landed on him,
right?
Unbelievable. Yeah, I don't. I get it. I'm just saying. It's like, well, I mean, there's a possibility here.
Well, Van Damme's character crawls out of the well, and now he's on a mission to find Fender. Mm-hmm. But what we think is going to happen? This is actually kind of an interesting
spoiler alert. To anybody who's going to watch this.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing that happens is you think the movie is going to be him escorting this cyborg. So this takes place in the future where some plague has wiped out humanity, not COVID-19. This is like COVID-20. Okay.
Right.
COVID-20 has wiped out the planet, and they have the cure, or at least the information needed to make a cure, inside the brain of this cyborg. When I say they, I mean the last scientists that are alive. And so she's getting transported by this other guy back to Atlanta from New York.
From Atlanta to New York and back.
Right. But they only get to New York before her escort is killed by Fender, who wants to own the cure for himself. He He doesn't want the thing to be cured. And so you think when the cyborg meets Van Damme momentarily, that that's what he's going to do. She asks him, escort me to Atlanta, right?
Right.
But the cool twist is that he actually doesn't give a crap about the plague being cured. All he wants is Fender.
Yeah. Right.
And so he doesn't escort her at all. In fact, she gets captured and Fender is bringing her to Atlanta himself because he wants to own the cure.
Yeah, he wants the cure for himself.
Lots of cool choices, I think, by the filmmaker in this movie is from a narrative standpoint.
This is not a knock. I actually really did enjoy the special effects of the cyborg where she took off her wig.
Yeah.
It was just like because of the budget. I'm just like, wow, that's actually pretty well done for
no
money.
There's all kinds of points. And when they had the mechanical eyeball that raised up out of it, and then it came apart again and the middle part came out. I'm like, this is pretty good for considering how much money they had.
It was a well spent movie. Like they didn't waste money.
Right. It's not like Howard the Duck where they blew their entire budget on the 5-minute duck planet scene in the beginning.
Or Megaforce's Balls of Doom.
That's right. The firework Balls of Doom in Megaforce. The only way they wasted all their money on that movie is just in renting all those dune buggies.
Right. Vehicles and that Cave of Wonder.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was made out of paintings.
Right.
Oh, God.
Here's a scene that must be discussed. Let's talk about the first fight scene. Because there's really only three big fight scenes that Van Damme has in this movie. So the first fight scene is he is now kind of following after Fender. Fender is, torched a village.
Yeah.
To steal a boat because he's like, you think I'm walking all the way to Atlanta? They're going to take a boat down the Atlantic to Charleston. And so Van Damme gets to this village that's now been burnt, and there's a one lone female survivor that he befriends after she tries to kill him, right?
Right.
Yeah, she's like hiding a knife underneath her or a makeshift
shiv. And Van Damme, they're basically saying, he's like, I don't think you should come, but whatever, I'm not going to stop you if you want to follow me, right? And so they get to this trail. We know they're in Hoboken at this point because there's like a broken sign. So they're in New Jersey. And there's bad guys. I don't think these are Fender's guys. This is the one thing the movie doesn't do great is explaining who all these different people and factions are.
Yeah. I don't think they were Fender because Fender was on the river.
They're just random raiders.
Yeah, they are random raiders in this building. It's kind of like Fallout. Remember Fallout?
Yeah, that's why I'm just calling them raiders. Because
random raiders in this abandoned building.
She basically, he says, and this is like a running gag in the movie, stay here.
Right.
Don't move.
Don't move.
Right?
Don't move.
And she never does. So he runs into the forest and takes out two guys that are running towards them.
Right.
Yeah. Also, these guys like to wear fishnets on their face.
Yeah, I wouldn't mess with a guy with fishnets on her face.
No.
No. I'm out.
It's very intimidating.
It is. Because you're just like, well, you went through the time. I'm out.
I know what I'm wearing next week.
Don't you dare wear the fishnets.
He basically is, doing his thing. She runs into this abandoned building, and within 2 minutes, there's 12 guys.
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
She managed to generate 12 more guys to come after her.
And they all just kind of start surrounding her on this top floor of this abandoned building. And this is something, we're not going to have a lot of top quotes in this movie. As you said, there's just not a lot of them.
Yeah.
But if we could take that, what we normally say as a top quote, and into top shots, there's so many beautiful shots in this movie that communicate what a great line would communicate.
Yeah.
And when you get the guy that jumps up on the stone platform and he's got the chains and he's just like the chain tapping is them tapping them against the wall and it does this great pan out of him just kind of squatting there. It's a great.
Yes.
And you see the other people in behind him start to file in and you start to realize there's way more than just him.
Right.
At first it looks like just the one dude she runs into.
Mm. And then it's like a wide shot pan out. And
yeah, it's perfect. Great shot.
The fight scene itself was very precise.
Yes.
Like they literally shot every punch, every kick,
Yeah. And kind of rhythmically too, right? It was boom. Boom.
Punch to the face. Everything was, literally saw every single thing. Like, it was very over-detailed.
Yeah.
Fight. Like, it was, they pay attention to detail on with every fist, every kick that they ever did.
And so Van Damme rolls up with his gun, and I'm like, oh, cool, you can just shoot all these guys. Gets one shot off before somebody grabs him.
Right.
But then we find out he's got one of the best toys in the whole movie. Knife boot.
And he does the roundhouse.
Yeah.
Van Damme kick and
cuts the guy's throat with a roundhouse kick. With the knife sticking out of the front of his boot. That was awesome.
That was really good.
But he just dismantles all of these guys.
Yes, he does.
The girl, now this is how you know that this movie was not shot in 2021.
No.
She would have beat up five or six guys on her own.
Of her own, yeah.
Right. Yes. She does kinda, almost nothing.
No, she did do like self-defense type work on the one guy. Or just the second battle.
No, the one guy. She grabs his nuts.
And she kicks him off and stuff like
oh,
that.
Oh, so, you know what? That
she
was
legitimately
cool.
does do some cool of her yes. own one. Personal protection on the one guy.
Yeah, that scene where she kicks the guy down the elevator shaft. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, no, that was good. But she grabs his nuts first, which is like the
self-defense
number one, right? Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. We did the same thing in Mumber Man, right? We're like, the first thing we're going to teach you is how to go for the nuts, okay? Yes. And so she did that, and she did kick him off the elevator shaft, which was one of the best dummy falling scenes I've ever seen.
Most stiff dummy I've ever seen in my life.
But that was all well and good. She definitely wasn't athletic herself.
Right.
Whoever they cast, I can't remember the girl's name. Every single time she...
Deborah Richter,
thank you. Every single time she swung like a pipe or threw a punch or anything, she did it in the most unathletic looking way possible.
But at the same point, that would have potentially been the one person who slinked away from the village to get away from the fighting.
Yes.
They might be that way.
No, which I actually am celebrating. I'm happy that they did that. Instead of like every, you know,
look, I'm an assassin superstar as well.
Right. No, you're some rando from a village that got burned down. So this is the way they should have done it, I feel like. But I think it's a good first fight scene for the movie.
Yeah, it was a very good, it gave you like what you're going to be in for later on.
And it's not the best fight scene, probably the weakest of the three fight scenes. But I think Van Damme shines in any of these.
He does. He shines in any type of fight scene.
And he re-edited this film like Bloodsport. I don't know if you knew about this.
I read about it that he rewrote or re-edited this movie.
This happened with Bloodsport. They had a cut. They're like, we can't release this movie. It's bad. Right?
Wow.
And so he said, can you give me 3 months, this is now a martial arts guy who had just made his first movie. Let me edit the film. Give me 3 months. Like, we'll give you 2 months. Okay. And so they let Van Damme go in with an editor into an editing bay and recut the fights to be more exciting.
Yeah.
And Bloodsport is a legendary movie that everybody loves.
It's a great movie.
Right?
I love it. I love
so Bloodsport. He saved that movie.
Yeah.
From a filmmaking standpoint. People don't give him credit for this. I think he's just like...
He's a French...
The guy that says four words and roundhouse kicks people in the face. Right.
Van Damme is such a... He's awesome all across the board.
Yeah.
Now that he's not in his career, he's not taking himself seriously and he's enjoying being Van Damme with the volume turned way up.
Yeah.
Early on, like, he made money hand over fist. You can go through his filmography. You can like some of them and not like some of them, but it's just like he had hit after Bloodsport. It wasn't like Steven Seagal. It was hit. He had a hit all the way up to 2000.
For 10 years, he was printing money.
Yeah. Every movie he made, either you enjoyed it or not enjoy it, was a made Ugo dollars.
Right. And he had a lot to do with that behind the camera, too, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so the same thing happened with this movie. They had a cut of this film that they couldn't release, and Van Damme went in and re-edited Cyborg to make it releasable.
I did not know that. I was reading something. I thought he rewrote something. Like he took and rewrote most of it.
He recut it.
That's even better. That's awesome.
That's what I'm saying. So he knows how to cut and shoot a fight scene and,
Why has he not directed a movie yet?
Yeah, I don't. It's surprising to me that he hasn't, actually. But maybe he just doesn't want to.
Van Damme in Van Damme, directed by Van Damme.
That'd be awesome. Fighting Van Damme. He loves to put himself, like, as a double in a movie.
Van Damme versus Van Damme.
They could do a double impact sequel where this time they're fighting each other.
In red underwear? Red silk underwear?
All right, another scene that must be discussed.
Is this the beach scene?
No.
But
go ahead. If you guys want to talk about the beach scene, let's talk about the beach scene.
That was legitimately going to be the reason you watched this movie.
No. This was... Why? in these movies.
Yes.
She's been following him for what? A couple days?
Yeah. Not even a day, maybe.
She takes off her clothes just before she's nighttime and runs into the salt water to get clean. I'm sure that's why.
Well, they didn't have bathing suits.
I'm not knocking that. She runs
into the ocean.
She runs into the ocean, gets clean to the salt water. That's fine.
He goes out an hour later or so, whatever. It's darker out. He's in the ocean, comes back.
Comes back and he's glistening like Van Damme does.
In the moonlight.
In the moonlight. That's contractually obligated.
Right.
Right. Okay.
And his face still looks dirty.
Right. He didn't go head under.
No, that's right. He didn't. No. He went. They oiled him from the neck down.
Oh, yes.
They only had a $500,000 budget.
They couldn't afford face oil. It's a different oil.
It is.
And there's some not so memorable dialogue. I don't remember what they were saying.
Right.
But it doesn't matter what they were saying.
Offers herself.
Right.
Yeah.
And then she does the drop down. I'm like, what? What? You only known this guy for 2 days. And then.
But again, classic. This is. That's what I'm saying. This is an interesting choice.
Builds.
He.
Him.
Doesn't. Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, like, I don't remember this happening first time I watched it. And then he just goes and pulls up her top.
He has zero interest.
I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
It's the first Van Damme movie where he doesn't just be like, oh, yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They keep making the filmmaker kept making interesting choices instead of what we assumed would happen in every tropey action movie.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Is that he reaches in, you think, oh, he's going for it. Right.
Yeah.
And instead, he grabs the blanket and pulls it back over her. And then that's a more interesting.
Right.
Now, as a viewer, you're like, oh, why
is truly fallen over? Because we don't have the whole flashback we discussed already yet.
Right, you're still getting pieces at
we
this.
We don't
point.
Have that information pieces,
it just
yet.
Shows you how in love he was with the woman.
Right,
that
right.
Dropped down a well.
Well, because he starts thinking about her.
Me having watched it the first time, you've seen it before, obviously. At that point, where because I'm thinking like, all right, here we go, good movie. This is why James has got me watching this.
Jeez.
And like, legitimately, he goes the other way. I was like,
Rob
okay,
Clint like that. So, it's movie Rob Clint.
Of that's band, terrible. That's the second one, cheeks. You guys.
Yeah,
but like legitimately, he goes and covers her back up, and I think now it's like, all right, so he really must have somewhere fallen for this because we had a little glimpse of it, but not an actual. I don't think we've had the they wake up yet.
No.
In the morning.
No, no, yeah,
thing yet.
No,
so yeah, they it builds that character as well. He's not interested in that. This truly is revenge and love.
Yeah, which means. It sells it even more. Yeah,
that was an interesting scene to me because I was like, "Wow, he doesn't glisten in the moonlight."
No, he's not interested.
He's not interested.
He's interested in every other Van Damme movie, but not this one.
Right.
This should just show you how much he hates Fender.
Oh, dude. I think he hates him more than Sergeant Andrew Scott.
I can't wait till we talk about Universal Soldier, the best bad guy in any Van Damme movie ever.
The best bad guy, period.
Maybe. He's up in the ranking.
Top 10 bad guy list.
All right, so let's talk about the other scene that must be discussed. It's a long one, but I think it's the centerpiece of the movie. They go to, I don't know what it is, it's like a refinery or, yeah. You know.
Are we still doing action movie tropes?
Yeah. Want me to hit the button?
Yes, because every 80s action movie had a refinery.
You're right. They have to go to an old abandoned refinery to fight.
Yes. I love it.
Like, we need to have a fight. Does anybody know where there's a refinery around here so we can have our people meet up?
I keep trying to convince Rick and Ryan, like, we need to do a movie in a refinery. I don't know the plot. Let's
doesn't
just do
need
something.
A plot. But they're, as we've said, they've been tracking Fender. And this is where they finally meet up for the first time. His gang of pirates and Gibson and the girl meet up at this refinery. And they have, I think it's a great scene. We'll go through it. But they are,
overall,
the huge fight, which turns into a chase, which turns into a fight.
Right.
It's a great scene. But yeah, you're right. He says the first thing, stay here.
And then. After, I mean, again, we'll get back to that, but they go through, and she even makes it, oh, I guess I really should have stayed here.
Well, not only that, she says he leaves, and literally 20 seconds later, she's like, F it, and leaves.
Starts slinking off, yeah.
Right? And not 1 minute later, she runs right into Fender.
Yep.
Right.
And is knocked out and here, placed right before his feet.
Here's the fantastic part of that I saw as, like, not fantastic, but, like, just surprising. She is slinking around the corner. She's checking. She backs up to the corner. She looks over real good, makes sure nobody's there. She goes out around that corner. All right, cool. And then she goes through this next exactly the same corner, but obliviously looking off the other way.
That's
and
right.
Walks an entire body and a half past opening before looking behind her to see if there's the entire gang of baddies there waiting.
Right, but even if she'd known they were there, she wasn't going to do anything.
Right, but she might have been able to look and like, oh,
or not go through that
and
door.
Not gone that
That's
way.
True. That's true. But Fender finds her. And
how does he find her? He has the dirtiest sunglasses in the entire world.
How does he see
those
anything?
Those are some Oakley blades, yo. That's thermonuclear protection.
They're cool. They're cool. They'll definitely shield your face from a nuclear blast or your eyes anyway.
I love his outfit. I love the attire. I love the chains. I love everything about him. Love the hair.
The full the glasses. Black Oakley razor blades.
I do like the Oakleys. I'm just like.
That looks like they've been rolled around in the mud.
They're like, how does he see?
It works because it makes him look very intimidating.
It does.
The whole thing, the whole getup, which we should say now is a costume reused from Masters of the Universe. I don't know if you knew this.
I saw similarities.
They were, so this was originally, this movie was Masters of the Universe 2. It was being made by Canon Films.
With Dolph Lundgren?
Well, originally. But then they went out of business. You know, Canon famously folded because of all their terrible financial decisions. And they reworked the script into Cyborg, but they still used a lot of the stuff they had from Masters. So you remember that guy in Masters, Blade, that was fighting He-Man, had like the two swords and
right.
like this looked like yeah. a space pirate?
Yes.
That whole big chainmail thing was the same thing that Fender wore in this movie.
Fender wore it better.
Way better.
Way better.
Okay, but that's where the costume is from.
Wow.
And
thank you.
This movie had far less of a budget than Masters of the Universe.
And it was a way better
and
film.
Was so much better. They did so much more with so much less. And yeah. they used it better than they did with the other one. But yeah, but Fender, very intimidating.
Oh yeah.
I don't understand how he sees anything. Is that why he's always ripping his glasses
he's got his
off?
Coke eyes.
He does look like somebody from Fallout.
Yes.
Right?
Fallout ripped off this movie.
Every time he pulled his glasses off, he looked like this like dopey yeah. cross-eyed Fallout reject. And Grace would laugh every single time. His eyes look scary, but for some reason she thought it was funny. I don't right. know. But anyway, I digress. Van Damme, this whole sequence is where he earns his money.
Yes.
Filmed with great intensity. It starts off where they run towards each other, him and this raider
right.
like, on a walkway.
That scene,
oh.
the camera work and the intensity buildup.
He starts off twirling his gun, and Dana starts laughing. I'm watching this with my wife, and she goes, well, he's got a gun. He's just going to shoot him. I think it's going to be like an Indiana Jones right. moment, right? But he doesn't. He puts the gun away. Pulls his own knife, and they just run full speed at each other down this catwalk.
He
starts running
before he pulls the knife. He yeah. pulls the knife on the run.
That's right. That's right. And it's a great little moment.
Yes.
Great use of slow motion. Like, not, I think it's not overused, personally.
You say in, through the whole thing, slow motion's not overused? I think
no, in this is, in this moment.
Oh, in this yeah. moment, yeah. yeah. I was going to say, they do a lot of slow motion in that hit, and then back to the other baddies are running at full speed, but you're still fighting in slow motion. Like, if you fought that guy at full speed, you'd be ahead of him by a lot right now.
That's why they're catching up, because he's fighting yeah. in slow motion.
I mean,
why didn't they think of these things? You understand how time works, right?
Cyborg created bullet time.
He didn't. He's not Max Payne. He's not slowing down time on his own.
He created knife time, Van Damme time.
Yeah.
Oh man.
But so he fights off a couple of dudes. Great scene where he kicks the guy up onto the. You know, doesn't he break his neck with his foot?
Yes.
Yes.
He yeah. just kicks him right.
He
in
just
the,
puts his foot at yeah. that 45-degree angle,
and
like
just
he does.
Snaps his neck.
Just breaks his neck. And Van Damme. This is right after Bloodsport, so he's still doing that thing a lot where he's like. And just like yelling right after.
That's a trademark, man.
But I love it. I don't care.
I love it too.
I love it. I don't care. It's great. You can never change my mind. It's so. And but eventually he gets back downstairs yeah. and he sees Fender.
Right.
Right. Well,
and
before
he
that,
wants Fender. You
he swings
here.
On a pipe. Did you notice that part?
I did. He falls off. He gets knocked off of this thing, or he jumps off. I don't remember exactly because yeah. he's avoiding somebody else's shooting at him.
Yeah.
And he. Hangs onto the pipe. Well, they think that he's fallen and he's going to die, but he
right.
halfway down hangs onto this pipe, and then the guy starts shooting at him, and he throws the biggest body spasm ever to break the pipe and swing all the way down onto the ground.
Yes.
Perfect length pipe break. I mean, they did some math on this.
It was right, it precise. Like swooped him straight onto yeah, like running. Like,
exactly. Yeah. It's like, I have never seen a 43-foot-long stick of you know, quarter-inch water pipe or three-quarter-inch water pipe. But, I mean, they did a yeah. good job with that.
And so he lands, and then he sees Fender there, and he's standing over the girl, which I assumed was dead.
Yeah, I thought she was dead.
Because when has right. Fender not killed somebody?
I thought I missed the scene. I'm like, did he kill her, and I just missed this? So
no.
I rewind, and I go, okay, she's alive.
I thought her death happened, like, off camera. I'm like, really, right. we're gonna kill her off camera,
right.
this main character? And there's another great, again... Not no great dialogue, but another part filmed with great intensity as he's working his way towards Fender and
right.
like won't he's like killing this dude while he's still locked eyes with Fender.
Yeah,
and
now like, he gets his three other shots off his yeah. his weapon that has four shots. He
yeah.
goes 1, 2, 3 shots.
Yeah.
Pulls the fourth. Click. It's empty. I'm like, hey, look, they didn't actually fix his gun.
They didn't
while
Deep
he wasn't
Rising
looking.
This.
This is good.
Imagine if it was like Deep Rising and he just could just fire that thing. Like over and over and over and over again, and it just would keep spinning like the little minigun.
That movie had too much testosterone.
Yeah. And he kills a guy right in front of Fender, who doesn't like that at all, because that's when he MFs him and essentially shoots him himself.
Yeah, he says the word, and he starts tries to shoot him, and then obviously he doesn't hit him.
Right, and he gets surrounded, right?
Well, he hit him in the shoulder.
He hit him in the shoulder, and he goes down.
My apologies.
And then the band kind of all comes out of the woodwork, right?
Yeah, now there's 150. And why are we fighting Van Damme? Like, in every movie, you can push the button. I don't care. Why are we fighting Van Damme? One at a time, spaced out, and just enough time for him to finish kicking your ass.
Yeah, that's a definite movie trope. Is the one, and that was definitely an 80s and 90s thing. They don't do that so much anymore.
All right, we got 42 guys, but we're going to space them out for you.
That's right.
Give you a moment.
The funny thing is, when they all came out together, the band of pirates, the first thing my wife says is, there's no way all these people fit on that boat.
We forgot the boat knife sharpening scene.
Yeah.
For 50 grown men in a red room.
This is another great decision that the filmmaker makes. While he's there, this girl who we'd only ever seen kind of on the side as a periphery character with Fender, this blonde girl that's part of his gang, starts to walk up, and you see the necklace. And this is where we get the flashback where we now realize who this girl is.
Right.
She's the girl that one of the kids that he was transporting that was stolen and taken away. And you think she's going to walk up and have this reunion with him.
Or not.
But what she does is she walks up, and the way the camera worked, the way they put the camera, she walked right up, boom, next to Fender. The score swells up, and it pans out, and you're like, oh, crap, man. She's 100%
on that side.
Loyal to Fender. And so a great moment for him to realize.
Yeah, he was pretty upset when he saw that.
Right.
Yeah, he was just like,
so now he's more angry again.
Yeah, now he's more angry. He's like, oh, okay, that's how it is.
And so we get the great knife throw. I don't know how they did this from a special effects standpoint, because you've got to have the actor dodge the knife, and the knife comes in perfectly straight and flies right past his head, right? It's not spinning like a, you know, somebody that would throw an overhand knife. Like, he like underhanded it, you know, grabbed it out of his boot, and it just perfectly straight whizzes right past his head in slow motion. I was pretty impressed by it.
It was a good special effect.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, I don't know if they actually, you know.
I doubt that you could throw it like that perfectly.
Right, no, but if they had some type of launcher in order to, you know, like a spring.
A knife gun?
Launcher. Yes, a knife gun.
The knife gun.
The knife gun is real?
Yes, of course it is.
Okay, because we joke around. Joe Gortowski made this joke. We watched the first Expendables movie when Eric Roberts gets killed at the end, and it's Barney. It was Stallone and Jason Statham.
Yeah.
And Stallone's shooting his gun, and then it's just giant knife sticks right in his chest that obviously Statham threw, but they didn't do a great job in filming it to make it look like that happened. And Joe just goes, he shot a knife out of his gun.
I remember that.
Right?
The knife gun.
The knife gun is real. That's what you're
absolutely.
Saying?
Absolutely, yes. They made a knife gun to throw this thing so that they could actually film it.
Where is this knife
gun? Why haven't people made knife guns actually in movies to use?
I don't know.
If it's a thing that they can do, they did it obviously in this low budget movie. They should have, somebody should have a knife gun.
We'll go back to the shop and we'll make one today just so you have it.
And there will be, that would be such a great bit for a character, bad or good guy. Like, this guy's got a knife gun.
What the hell is wrong with you?
That would be incredible. Your gun shoots bullets, mine shoots knives.
If anyone out there has a knife gun, please send it to us.
Don't.
No, do not mail us a knife gun.
Please, that's illegal.
We have children.
Oh, sorry, don't send it.
We all have children.
But after they shoot the knife gun.
Please take a picture and email it to us.
I want to see that it exists.
Yeah, right. Show us that it exists.
So after they fire the knife gun, Van Damme then books it, right? He throws the knife and runs, and there's now 40 pirates chasing after him.
Including one of the pirates is Ralph from Universal Soldier.
Is that who that was?
Yeah, he was a bigger dude.
So it was post-apocalyptic Fabio.
Yeah.
Is what we were calling him at my house.
Post-apocalyptic Fabio.
That's right.
He'll forever be that.
He looked like Beastmaster or Beastman but with a shaven face.
He would have been a great Beastman in Masters of the Universe.
Right. He was huge.
He was huge.
Guy was jacked. They all chase him into the sewer. First of all, he's able to outrun them all while carrying
That's my jam.
A woman.
He not only does he outrun them all while carrying a woman.
Yeah.
He gets out there, but he outruns them all at a separate speed as well. They were all in the same room.
Well, he doubles back and picks her up because he like runs away, then comes back, and there's no one there.
Right.
And so he talks to the cyborg for a minute.
He pulls the grate off of this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, he leaves the cyborg again because don't care.
The cyborg says, I don't want to go with you. You can't defeat Fender.
Right. Yeah. She's like, I don't know
how strong he is. Yeah.
Right. But yeah, so then anyway, yeah, go ahead.
So he like legitimately pulls the grate off the sewer grate. He goes and he goes down there, and then he pulls the girl down with him, and then they just start trudging through.
Yeah, but you even see as his head is disappearing in the hole, somebody's already coming.
Right, they're already on their way. So he's down in the hole, and he's carrying this woman through most times, you know, knee deep or better water.
Yeah.
And he sets her down and props her up against the wall in the water, yet she doesn't pass out and fall into the water and drown, which is fortuitous. Because then later scenes would be useless.
Right.
He goes back and he does the best
thing. Oh, this is like one of the most iconic Van Damme moments of all time.
Are we talking about
the
birth of Assassin's Creed?
That's right.
We see the light shining off of Van Damme. And the whole time you're watching this, is like, why is he hiding in the light where somebody's going to easily make out his silhouette and see that, hey, that's where he is. But then the bad guy comes in with the light shining off of him. It's like, Van Damme's going to see you. And they're walking and there's all this tension and you don't know what's going on.
Because it was shot beautifully.
And then it comes out and he's legitimately doing the splits above this guy's head, knife above his face, ready to just jab it into his mouth hole and kills the guy.
And just that shot, before anybody's killed, right, where you just finally pull out, and it's just such a great, from a filmmaking standpoint.
Right, the wide shot.
Great shot.
And that's where I think you love this movie, because it is done very well. Mm-hmm. And I will concede that 100%. From a filmmaking standpoint, this thing is damn good.
Yeah.
From a keeping my interest standpoint, however, that's where others will rate it lowly. Because, you know, your average Rotten Tomatoes user or IMDb rating person isn't a film buff. They are watching entertainment. This was not entertaining.
Hopefully this is the way we're building our case right now, that when you look at the movie from a different way, that you can see that it's better, it's more enjoyable, and that the next time you watch it, maybe you like it better.
If I go into a movie saying, I don't care if I enjoy this or not, I'll enjoy it more.
Yeah.
Wait.
Exactly. Don't think about it too much.
No, I enjoyed that scene. It was very cool because it reminded me, like I just said, the birth of Assassin's Creed. I'm like, that is Assassin's Creed in 1980, like before. Yeah.
And this is Van Damme turning this into an iconic thing for him. He did it in Bloodsport.
Yeah, he did it in Bloodsport.
He dropped down onto the ground to nail the dude in the groin.
Right. Yes.
This is the first time he's like going up somewhere unexpected.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just how he does it. It's really cool in the shot.
Yeah.
And just the lighting, everything.
Everything
but
worked.
But then you see the rest of the baddies are pouring into the sewer while this is happening and stuff too. But they're pouring into the sewer at about a city block distance apart.
Right.
For whatever reason. And, you know, I was like, all right, cool. So they keep going. And they keep going. Like, as one guy's going, one guy's coming into view. Like, oh, that's where they went. And so they're just keep following this trail.
Yeah.
But then they cut out. They get to the end of the sewer and it's done.
And she's awake now.
Leave. And it's like, can you crawl up this on your own? Yeah, I can. Like, what? why have I been carrying you this whole time then?
She's awake.
I think I can. Get up there.
But then they get up and they start running across this field. And this is the funny part to me. They run across this swampy field, and you can absolutely see that there's a trail they're following.
Sure.
They're not just randomly running across the field. There's already been people here before.
There's been people.
Wouldn't it be easier to just kind of go and run off and hide in this tall vegetation here?
Would it be slower? Certainly.
No, just hide.
But you wouldn't have a Van Damme movie.
Here's my question. Why is there a manhole in the middle of a field in the middle of nowhere?
That is a good question.
Maybe that field didn't exist before. Because you got to think, the trail through Hoboken was a wooded trail.
I doubt that's the case.
This is how many years into...
That's a good point. I'll take that.
Global warming raised the water levels.
I actually like the fact that they staggered the people, because what this does is this allowed for incredible dramatic tension throughout this next fight. Because the guys were coming out of the hole only every so often, as you said, about a city block different, you knew that every time he's fighting this guy, that he's got about 2 minutes till somebody else gets there. And so it turned into a great dramatic device for him, because he'd finally off this guy, the next guy shows up. Now he's fighting this guy, and you see the next guy's already coming, right? And so what that did was create this
now, if I'm like
impending sense of doom. Yeah.
If I'm the third guy in line, I'm going to stand there and I'm going to watch him and make sure I know where he's going, but I'm waiting for 4 and 5. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Right.
Bob and James are coming with me. All right. We're doing this.
Right. And eventually enough guys get there where he's overtaken. Right. But in the meantime, he has a great fight scene in the like knee deep water with long hair, pointy, stabby stick guy.
Right.
Yep.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. Blaze, the guy's name is Blaze Leung, and he's was actually the martial arts coordinator for the film, the guy that played the long-haired pirate with the staff. And I just thought it had a great fight in the water. Intense. Ooh. And I love fight scenes where they go on long enough where the guys are tired.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they don't just keep maximum energy through the entire thing.
They keep, they're fatigued.
And fighting is exhausting after like
especially
2 minutes.
Knee deep water.
Right.
You're trying to lift up your leg.
And people like you around, around in a boxing match is like 2-3 minutes long and then they go collapse in the corner because fighting is exhausting.
It is very exhausting.
And so it's annoying that sometimes in movies they're just never kind of depict that. So when these two guys are literally like half bent over, like struggling to breathe and still trying to fight each other, I love it, man. It just ups the intensity for me.
It does.
But it also makes it believable that, hey, we were able to overwhelm this guy with time and numbers.
You know? Right. Right.
He's obviously the baddest fighter on the planet. We know that.
These are the little things that make a movie stand the test of time and be good again when you rewatch it later instead of like these disposable action movies where it's just they don't take things like that. Like time and numbers and all that means nothing.
Right.
In those types of movies.
No.
I have to tell you guys a story here. Story time.
Story time.
We need a button for story time.
As we know, Fender, they all eventually catch up to him, and then he has this fight with him on the sand in the beach, right, where it's basically Van Damme trying to kick him, but he's so tired and exhausted at this point. His kicks are doing nothing, and Fender is just one haymaker after another, just blasting this guy until he finally hits face first into the sand. As I told you before, I've watched this movie many, many times. It used to be run on cable all the time. Obviously heavily edited because it's violent. But that's probably the first time I saw it was on TV. Back in the day, children, we didn't have remote controls, or if you had one and you couldn't find it, you would have to go up to the television and change the channel on the actual TV.
Yep.
Right?
The turn knob.
You had a turn knob.
Sometimes your parents would holler from the other room when you're in the back of the house. You're like, hey, come here. Come all the way out there. Like, change the channel.
Right. Imagine you guys get annoyed. My kids get annoyed when I ask them to do things. Imagine if I asked them to come across the house to change the channel for me. They would think I was a crazy person.
Right.
Very annoying.
Would they do it?
Some of them might, maybe, and some of them maybe not.
Grace would have walked out of the room.
Right. Grace would just leave. She'd be like, no, I'm not doing that for you. No. You're already here. It wouldn't matter.
You're standing right.
You should try that experiment. Have him come down. And she would like, can you turn on my PlayStation?
She'd pet the button and leave.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly
like, see,
what
I could have done it.
Right.
But I won't.
I don't know how old I was. So this movie came out in 1989. So it was probably at least a few years after that. Because it was on television. So figure I'm 12, 13 years old at this point, right? And I'm flipping through the channels. And so I have to be very close to the television because this is, I'm turning the knob. And I flipped to Cyborg at the exact moment when Fender does the headbutt straight to camera. If you remember when he finally picks Van Damme up off the sand, he does his headbutt straight to camera, looking like he's headbutting the camera.
Right.
And I was standing directly in front of it. So when I flicked to it, and all I see is Fender, go, and I screamed and hit the ground, okay? Literally, in real life, it scared the crap out of me because I was not expecting it. And so Fender actually headbutted me onto my butt in real life.
Cocaine eyes just knocked you on your butt.
It was the perfect timing. I couldn't have planned it. It was running on television, and I just happened to flip to it immediately when that happened.
That is funny. Oh, my God. That really happened?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And I wish I could have been in the room sitting on the couch watching you do this.
So every time now, I bring that up to every time I see this scene now when he is beating up Van Damme and picks him up and headbutts the camera.
Did you tell Dana this?
Well, because we were watching the movie, I didn't want to stop it to tell her, but maybe she'll listen to this and tell her. But now, I always think
story,
about that.
Babe. Story time. You to push the button on your phone for story time music.
Right. And Fender was a very scary looking person when you're a kid. Suddenly someone's headbutting you. Even now, right? But so they nail Van Damme to a cross.
Yes.
Or crossbow him, it looks like.
Yeah, they bolted him up there. He was chained and then they bolted him.
Yeah.
On the mass of a sailboat.
on the massive sailboat, and they leave him. And this is kind of a thing that they do. It's established in the first scene. You see people crucified.
Yeah, as they're running through New York.
As they're running through New York. Again, it's a gross movie.
Yeah, there's many dead bodies.
And the only reason I include kind of as a tail end of this, even though the fight scene's over, include the crucifixion scene is because we already talked about the flashbacks. This is the moment when he's on the cross where we get the entire story.
The whole flashback.
Right? We get the whole thing.
My favorite scene.
And we see exactly what happened, right?
Yeah.
And he's getting angrier angrier as he goes further. And
that's what I'm saying. The intensity. We make fun of Van Damme's acting all the time. And sometimes it's deserved. But the intensity with which he was violently trying to get off of that cross was incredible.
Yeah.
Now, Van Damme himself was probably not actually in pain from being crossbow bolted to the mast.
No.
However, you definitely see the pull through, like, that doesn't matter. You know, the pain is there. It doesn't matter. He just wants his revenge.
Yeah.
He cannot be here.
He went right to the Make Me Angry archives and went to the flashback.
Honestly, it was incredible. Some of the best acting he's done in his career. And, you know, he's had an uneven career from an acting standpoint. Some of it's really great. Some of it's not. This is definitely on the good side. And I'm sure it was uncomfortable whether or not obviously he wasn't actually bolted and might not have been in pain, but it was probably uncomfortable. And you channel that as an actor and just go for it. And he just went for it. So I just wanted to give him his props for that.
Oh, yeah. He delivered probably the best line in the whole movie.
Yeah.
Fender
just screams it. Yeah.
Snaps the mass. And
did he snap it or did the girl show up at the same time? Because she ends up cutting the rope and it falls over.
Well, he kicked it and it made the breaking sound and it fell over. So
but
I
at the same time, they show her cutting the rope and then he's going off the thing. So did she cut one of the stay ropes and the thing was easier to fall over? I don't know. It's a tough cut for me. I watched it one time and I did not go back and rewatch that.
Yeah.
I think he broke the mass, fell over, and she cut him free after he landed on the ground.
Yeah, and so I assumed she was dead. She actually had a fight scene we didn't talk about while he was fighting. She was also fighting this girl, chopped her hand off.
Right. Yeah.
That girl was a mean fighter, the Raider girl.
Yeah. I said, I thought the heroine was toast.
Yeah.
Right. I was like Deborah Richter is considering how she can't swing a pipe or do anything. She's
getting kicked around.
Yeah. But somehow wins that fight.
Yeah.
Cuts the girl's hand off. Well, but then they both hit the ground. Right.
Mm.
And then you kind of forget about her because at that point we focus on Van Damme fighting for the next 5 minutes. So when she shows up, I was legitimately surprised. And she cuts him off the crucifix and off they go to Atlanta, where this is, I would say, the final scene that must be discussed. The final showdown with Fender.
Absolutely.
In the streets of Atlanta.
The flooded streets of Atlanta.
Yeah. Just from an atmosphere standpoint, what a scene.
Yeah.
Shot at night in the rain.
You see the far shot?
Yeah.
Which Escape from L.A. did it when Snake walks up Sunset Boulevard. Cyborg did it first. The back shot, and you see the five people. They highlight them, so they want you to see where they're at.
Right. Well, it's also because it's a matte painting, and that was like the one effect that didn't do great with. But
I get what you're saying. It was a cool shot. Just walking up the highway, you see him, and I like that shot.
Yeah, that was great. Where did he get a bow and arrow?
I don't know.
Because he just randomly has a bow and arrow for the first time in the entire movie. Shoots one arrow into the ground as Fender's approaching, which I think is actually pretty cool. He's not going to try and get a sneaky kill or assassinate him. He shoots an arrow right in front of Fender to just tell him, hey,
I'm here.
I could have. Do
this. Fender smiles. He's like, all
right. Right.
Cool. Like, respect.
Respect. All absolutely. Right. And he's still, and this is something that Dan and I were going back and forth on. I'm like, he doesn't know that Van Damme is the guy from the well entire movie.
I don't think he does.
No.
No, he was 3 inches on his hair length at the time.
Right. Like, he doesn't know that this is him.
You have to assume
short hair at the time.
Coked out, ridiculous raider would be like, I killed that guy. He's
right.
Dead.
Well, and this is a Tuesday for him, right?
Right.
Like we joke about with Bison. Like
exactly.
Tuesday. Every Tuesday he went and killed another family and threw him down a well, I'm assuming.
Yeah, just because Van Damme
he loved the wells.
Yeah.
Had his, you know, pseudo family taken away from him and it's the biggest moment of his life. That's nothing.
Right.
For Fender.
For Fender. Yeah. And so Van Damme very quickly takes out a couple of Fender's dudes. It doesn't take very long for it to be one on one, is all I'm saying.
No, right. It doesn't.
Right?
It does. It literally goes to one on one. They're like, all right, we're
Fender takes off his chainmail.
Yep, drops it in the water.
Vincent Cline is in fantastic shape. Okay. This guy is was a big time professional surfer. He wasn't an actor.
No, he's a surfer in Australia.
Yeah.
And he was also in Point Break.
I was gonna say it was the guy from Point Break. Yeah, right?
When the surfers show up to try and beat up Johnny Utah, he was one of those guys.
Johnny.
Yeah. But this so dude's a professional surfer, okay? And you basically get these two shirtless guys just beating the crap out of each other. It's one of the most macho scenes in movie history, I feel like.
Damn right it is. It's okay to be a man in this movie. Testosterone pre-workout and cocaine eyes.
What I will say this is one of the stuntmen that he dispatches, Van Damme actually blinded permanently. Did you hear about this?
I read about that. Then the guy sued
him. The big African-American guy that was coming at him, he looks like he knifes him right in the face.
Uh-huh. He actually
got blinded him. Got him. And so Van Damme got sued and had to pay him
$400,000.
I don't remember what the settlement was, But
it seems still, light.
Yeah.
There's no amount of money.
Apparently the stuntmen were not big fans of him. That from what I watched, there's a whole video on YouTube where you can listen to the case and they'll go through what happened. And apparently a lot of the stunt guys, which I'm assuming played most of the pirate raiders.
Yeah.
Were not a fan of, because Van Damme would tag them all the time.
Oh, like this wasn't control pulling. Control wasn't there.
No. Yeah. And this is still early in his career. So I'm assuming he would take liberties.
Like Bruce Lee did.
Yeah. So he would, allegedly, you know, follow through a little bit too hard on some of his kicks and things like that.
You get the good shot sometimes that
which
way,
is man. Which made a good movie, but did not endear him to the stunt crew at all.
Yeah, so you're saying that the settlement was as big as the budget for the movie?
Yeah, but this is coming out of Van Damme's pocket, though.
Yeah, I know, but it's a good thing he made some money.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm assuming you got something on the back end.
Just, there's no amount of money you could pay back when you take someone's eyesight like that.
Well, that's the thing.
I don't think it was legitimate. I don't think he did it on purposely.
Obviously not.
No, I don't think he went like, I'm gonna take this guy's eye out. Right.
But it's just like when people get mad at people for like stuntmen or just like, oh,
yeah,
reckless. It's like, what is your job?
Sometimes you can be reckless with it, though, as opposed to...
You can, but it kind of gets a little nerve-wracking. You're just, like, hearing other people complain. It's like, you signed up to get the crap kicked out of you. I'm sorry that you got hurt. I'm sorry that some people take liberties with you. But all at the end of the day, you signed up to get the living crap kicked out of you. You signed waivers and contracts saying, if I die, blah, blah, blah. Now, I'm very sorry that this guy got blind, but it's just like when people just crap on actors...
Yeah, maybe
you legitimately put yourself in that situation to be the crap kicked out of you.
Right, but no one wants to lose their eyesight.
No, I get that, but you're legitimately...
This is not the eyesight guy.
If there's nothing... This
is not about the eyesight guy. It's about other people that are complaining. That guy has a legitimate reason.
Well, that's fine. That's fine. I'm not... Yeah, with the whiny stuntman, I'm not going to cry a river for those guys. Yeah,
you signed up to get the crap kicked out of you.
But... You know, for the other guy, and if he didn't have, you know, I don't know what the state of the unions were or health insurance or how they took care of their stunt guys back then, but if he couldn't work anymore.
No, that's terrible. Yeah, he got blind. That's terrible. Yeah. And I feel bad for that. I legitimately feel bad for that.
Yeah.
Like,
well, let's get back into the fight. Him and Fender are fighting one-on-one, and as I said, they strip off the chainmail and everything, and Fender legitimately goes completely insane.
He does.
All right. From an acting, like... This is a great mask for somebody that can't act. Is just
screaming,
just go crazy, right? If you can't like, and so Vincent wasn't an actor, but what he can do is scream and yell and look like he's trying to tear his own head off of his own shoulder. Like his neck was popping like
tree trunk,
like crazy. And
he was acting like Roman Reigns.
Honestly, the yelling and the gesticulating and it's like. Dude, chill. Like, you're going to pop a blood vessel.
But he sold it, though.
He did sell it. He sold it awesome.
He sold the poop out of it.
But there's like no dialogue in the fight at all. It's all just yelling.
Right.
And there's one point where the blonde girl walks up, and you think, oh, she's finally going to step in for the guy that used to take care of her family, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she does. He's getting beat up inside of a car. He's, like, smashing Van Damme's head in a car. And she yells at him to stop. And so it's this great moment where she's finally broken free of Fender's control, or at least her fear of Fender, and tells him to stop. And Fender goes over and kind of starts to try and kiss her, and it's a gross thing that happens. And then that's when the other girl shows up and gets stabbed.
Right.
And so Van Damme's in the car, and the other two girls are getting manhandled, essentially, by Van Damme. And there's a scene where they have a whole conversation, and it's just them yelling.
How did he end up in the car?
He got
thrown into the
windshield,
Okay. Once again, I must have missed that because I'm like, he's in a car, and then Fender attacks one of the girls, and then he power kicks his way out of the car.
Out of the car.
Does the Van Damme.
But that's the thing is they're yelling. She yells, no. He goes, ah. The other guy's like, They literally, if you go back and watch, have a whole conversation just in screaming at each other.
It was great dialogue.
It's hilarious. That's the best dialogue
that's
in the entire
movie. That's the best quotable.
Top quote in Cyborg is, ah.
The most used line. That is the catchphrase for the
movie. It really is. Kick a car so hard.
But look, man, I can't. I got to give it to Fender. I'm obviously the good guy wins. Spoiler alert. But this guy is a total badass. I mean, he blocks a knife with his forearm and doesn't care.
Yeah. And then he gets
just like, well, I would think that taking the knife to the forearm would be preferential to taking it to the face.
Right. But he doesn't try and evade. Or
he takes it. Like,
I'm not moving. I'm just going to block this knife with my forearm.
And then he takes it in the chest.
He doesn't just take a chest. He gets gutted.
Gutted, yeah.
Does he
get it?
Because there's a whole line. Yeah. Is he did it? And then you see Van Damme kind of go, he's lifting the knife.
Yeah.
And then when he falls and it's, supposedly
dead. I thought it was a straight stab and he kicked him and he fell down.
No. He looked like he'd been tore. At least that's the way I took it.
Unless they did so terrible with the blood that they...
Oh, the blood just ran down. I thought the blood just ran down his chest. I thought he got kicked.
It looked like there was a wound the whole way.
I took it that way as well.
Regardless, whether he was stabbed directly in the sternum or was in fact gutted, he should have been dead.
Thank God he wasn't.
But of course he's not in these movies. This is a movie trope, right? Just when you think guy's dead, he comes back to life.
Yes, he does.
All right, and he's having this reunion.
More screaming.
And his, looks like a turtle trying to pop his head out of his shell. Like his neck is just like.
He's trying to channel his inner Brock Lesnar.
And so we get a little bit more of a fight, which is a great fight between the two of them. And he ends up getting roundhoused onto a meat hook.
Right.
On the wall. I love it. The meat hook.
It's a great bad guy death. But he's not dead, right? He's just hanging there. I bet if they had cut back after the credits and he was like, somebody get me down. Fender, Fender can't be killed.
Ah!
That's right.
You're just a slab of meat.
That's right. and then he gets reunited. Now, unfortunately, the girl that he had been traveling with was killed by Fender. Sad. Rest in peace, true. Deborah Richter's character. But he's reunited with the blonde girl from his past, who is now obviously free from Fender because Fender's dead. And I'm assuming off they go into the sunset. They deliver the cyborg. But we never get to see if there's actually a cure or anything because that's not what the movie was about.
Next movie.
There was two more movies after this, but the line that the cyborg says, it's strange, but I think he is the real cure of this world.
That's what the world needs after a plague, to just get kicked in the face.
Kicked in the face and
that's right.
Awesome hair.
This guy's going to solve the world's problems with a roundhouse kick. It's kind of a ridiculous line to end on. But I actually like that they didn't focus on the cure or the plague barely at all.
Because
that's not what the movie's about.
No, it was a love story and a revenge movie.
That's right. And so that's all kind of peripheral stuff. Mm. So I really like that.
He's reunited with the estranged teenage daughter, if you will.
Yep.
The adopted teenage daughter. Fender's slab in the middle of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
And so that's the end of the film. And so I think let's take a couple minutes here and talk about the little things.
Oh boy.
This is a new segment for us. This is, I think, our third episode doing it. Just some of the things that we noticed that we didn't have a chance to talk about in the scenes that we chose to discuss. Little things from the movie that we either thought were ridiculous or enjoyed. Moments, dialogue, if you can find any.
I hate water.
You think I'm going to walk all the way to Atlanta?
I hate water.
I have a boat.
That's a great little thing.
It is.
That's a great one.
He just yells, I hate water.
Bob, I'm going to ask you to do something for me. This is a little thing. This is a little thing for me. I need a performance out of you.
Oh,
okay?
No.
Okay. The only quote from this movie that I thought was good.
What is it?
Is the opening dialogue from Fender, this paragraph here. I'm going to hand it over to you. This is the voiceover. So the movie begins in a voiceover, kind of setting the tone. You see a collapsed bridge.
Yeah.
Right? And setting the tone that this is the future, a post-apocalyptic future. So go ahead. This is Bob Hauser as Fender.
First, there was the collapse of civilization. Anarchy. Genocide. Starvation. Then it seemed things couldn't get any worse. We got the plague. The living death. Quickly closing its fists over the entire planet. Then we heard the rumors that the last scientists were working on a cure that would end the plague and restore the world. Restore it. Why? I like the death. I like the misery. I like this world.
Nice job. Nice job, Bob. That's my favorite line in the whole movie. And there's like been a bunch of metal bands that have used that.
Did you know it was
a rap
album?
Yeah. I was just saying, yeah. There's some metal bands that have used it. That whole voiceover, I like the pain. I like the suffering, all that. And that's the only memorable dialogue in the entire movie. So that's definitely a little thing that I loved. Another little thing that I loved is when Van Damme knocks out that guy with the bouncy ball. Do you guys remember that?
I do not.
He's just, they're in the random settlement. And he's trying to decide, you know, if he's going to go after him. And this dude steals this kid's ball.
I know. Why?
Right? And
the plague is already batted up. You have to steal a kid's bouncy ball.
And Van Damme walks over and he takes the ball away from the guy and just bam, and just hits him in the face with a bouncy ball. And the guy goes flying. It's so funny. It's the funniest part of the entire movie. Only Van Damme can knock you out with like a ball you get out of the giant bin at Walmart, right? With those big tall bins.
Yeah.
That's basically what it was. And he just two hands it right in the guy's face and knocks him out. You didn't remember that?
I didn't see that.
Oh. He was on his phone.
The exposition phone. The black guy that told the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the event, at the vendor.
That's right.
Yeah, he was telling him, like, you don't want to go to Atlanta.
That's right. You got to have that guy.
You got to have the guy that tells you not to do something.
Give me a little thing that you loved.
Well, I loved 30 grown men with mullets plus a woman in baby oil sharpening their objects, which was supposed to look like knives. And they're flexing.
That's right.
They're sharpening their knives.
I'm talking about the pirates on the boat.
Pirates on a boat.
They're all just sitting there sharpening their blades.
Their knives, while Fender is up on the bow saying, I hate water!
That's right.
It is sharpening. And I just love the detail of the biceps going up and down.
Yes.
Clint's like my emotions right now.
Do you have a little thing from the movie that you either thought was ridiculous or loved?
Well, I mean, like I said, there's absolutely good parts, action points of this movie that I enjoyed. But absolutely the splits on the wall, stab to the face hole. I mean, that thing was fantastic. There's a lot of good stuff in the movie. I did like the fight scene with the first fight scene with the chain hanging off the wall, stuff like that. We already touched on that already. So
that's all good.
I think most of the good stuff of there. Some of the details in the background that come from watching it 3 or 4 or 5 times, I don't see them.
Well, you got to go back and watch it again.
I definitely want to watch it again.
Here's the one thing, the last little thing I'll bring up, because we're running a little long. We got to get to the awards here. One thing that I'll bring up, foot speed and travel time mean absolutely nothing in this movie.
True story.
That's the one thing they got wrong.
At one point,
they got from New York to Atlanta in the same time as a boat.
They're in Hoboken, okay, right? Because we know, because they showed us signs. They're in New Jersey. They're getting to the Atlantic Ocean. Fender has already taken a boat and left for Charleston. We know this because he gets to that village after it's already been burned to the ground. And he's like, we have to take a shortcut to Charleston so we can be there when his boat gets there. This is the plan, Van Damme says. They beat the boat to Charleston on foot.
I mean, there would be a shortcut, because if they walked directly straight, that would be a shorter distance. However, taking a boat down the coast,
that's what I'm saying,
is going to be substantially faster.
Right. There's no way they get there before Fender.
Right.
And they don't just get there before him. They get there the night before him, because they hang out on the beach and sleep. And then when they wake up, he's there.
Right.
They beat him by a day.
Fender hates water.
Maybe he hates water so much he can only go like 2 miles and
what they back did in. They stop every time there was a dock?
No, they ran into Dennis Hopper and his smokers.
Oh my gosh.
Nice. Water World. We're doing that next.
We're doing it at some point.
All right, it's not next. But
there's a 3-hour cut of that film.
This isn't the only time in the movie where this happens. But they constantly, like, they get to Atlanta before Fender.
Yeah.
Because Fender gets there, and they're there with the bow and arrow.
Yeah.
How do they keep getting ahead of him?
He's Van Damme. He's the muscle of Brussels. He runs. He knows how to run.
You got to think, too, at some point, the odd part of that is maybe Fender wasn't going straight to Atlanta because it didn't matter. He didn't actually
want
the
cure. Did you see how slow that boat was going?
But legitimately, there was time enough for the wounds on his arms to semi-heal after coming off the crucifix.
No, legitimately, when he looks in his, you know, looks in his binoculars and looks, and she goes, what is it? Fender. So you see the boat.
Okay, but it's still you're still going down the coast. There's no way you're going to get to Charleston.
Well, he keeps stopping and destroying.
Right. You need fuel.
How long? I'm going to look right now. How long does it take to walk to Charleston from Hoboken? Hold on.
It will be on there. It's going to be.
It will.
Days. It will be on there.
Hoboken, New Jersey.
But that doesn't take sleep into account.
I'm not concerned about that. To Charleston.
Okay, you got to put in South destroying Carolina. Villages and throwing people down wells.
Okay, hold on. It'll tell me for all this. Okay, so it's 11 days. According to Google Maps, it would be an 11-day trip. Now, even looking at this map, there's not a straight line you can walk down to Charleston.
No, there's a fair bit of...
you kind of have to come west a little bit.
Water.
Right.
And crocodiles and alligators.
Well, you get there's more water because we know the water table's higher because it's, you know, several feet deep in Atlanta.
All right. Now let's see if Google can tell me how long it takes to take a boat.
Down the coast? Depends on the boat. How many miles is of coastline?
And listen, then 5 miles this is an hour. Fender's boat, and 90% of everybody on the boat was just sharpening their knives and doing curls.
If you figure a flat-out walk, you're doing 4 miles an hour. The boat probably goes 5.
Yeah.
It goes more than 5 miles
an hour. That boat wasn't going very fast.
It's not going to tell me, at least not in enough time where I can...
I stand by Van Damme and his speed walking abilities.
Actually, probably between scenes, they probably just hopped on a car, grabbed a bus...
I can pretty much say confidently, even though I can't, in the time that we have, figure it out in here, that it would not take 11 days to take a boat from Hoboken to Charleston.
If you were driving Fender's boat, it would.
No, they had to stop to sharpen their knives.
They were sharpening. He couldn't get anyone to make the boat go faster because they're too busy sharpening his knives. He hates water, and he's like, village, pull over.
Okay. They had to burn every village on the way. They had to
burn everything down.
That's the only thing that I could conceivably think. All right, fine. Let's give some awards to this movie. Let's give some awards to Cyborg, one of the best post-apocalyptic future fight plague-ridden movies of all time.
It really is.
It's good. So we're going to start with our Will Patton Award. There's so many random pirates and people to choose from here. Who would be your Will Patton Award winner? I'll start. The guy that gets stabbed in the face when he's doing the splits, the dude, the post-apocalyptic Fabio, because he's only in the one part. The dude is yoked out of his mind, definitely jacked up on coke and pre-workout. Okay, and he just is like his whole body is vibrating as he looks up.
He was a very
he's about to get stabbed,
and he had the nastiest baby teeth in his mouth. Like what? He opens his mouth and starts screaming. Yeah. What happened to your mouth?
No. He was definitely my award, my Will Patton Award winner. How about for you guys?
I would go with Fender.
He's in the movie way too much to be your Will Patton Award winner. Clint, it's to you. Think of somebody else.
The original guy that was transporting
the cyborg. Yeah.
He actually was killing it. He was out there. He was trying. He was doing his best.
Yeah.
You know, he was going to hold him off. You go ahead, and we'll take care of this. He's backing up at full speed, and then somebody just busts through a window. It's like, that's just bad luck, you know? He was doing all right until then.
He was doing good, and I thought it was a well-acted part, too. Yes, that's a good pick.
All right, I'll go.
That's when I was still paying attention to the movie.
I'll go with the stiff dummy falling down the elevator shaft.
Oh, my gosh. All right, I'll give it to you. He did his job. You know what?
He did.
He did his job.
He hit that. He made me believe that would hurt.
That's good. That's good. All right, let's go to our top three performers. So who I'm assuming everyone's going to pick the same two.
Three people.
Three. I think we could have the same two.
Okay.
Should we just say now, is everybody Fender picking Gibson. Van Damme and,
yes,
and
Van
Fender?
Van Damme and Fender.
All right. Who's your third? I'll say my third is Blaze Leung, the long-haired, pointy stick, stabby guy. Because not only was he the martial arts coordinator.
That's the goofiest. Not only sucking the fish from Deepa Sucky McSuckface. Long-haired, stabby guy.
You got to differentiate between these pirates. Somehow they don't say their names. They don't have names. Right now, I've said his real name is Blaze. Okay.
No,
but he did really good, I thought. Really, really good.
I just love the names you give people. That's all. It's just funny.
How about for you? Number three.
The woman companion.
Oh, yeah. Deborah Richter.
Absolutely.
She did pretty good.
She ran into that ocean like a champ. Oh,
I knew that's why you were going to pick her. Who's your number three?
Who is my number three? I would have to go with the cyborg.
Okay.
Because she was actually very good.
Yeah. Pearl Prophet.
Because she was in like two scenes.
Yeah.
And then she spoke meaningfully in each scene that she was in. So
that's good. That's a good pick. Go
with the cyborg.
So here's what I'm going to make you do. I'm going to make you make a decision here.
Oh, God.
Who was better in this movie, Van Damme or Fender?
Fender.
You're going to pick Fender. No,
I'm going to pick Fender.
And you're going to pick Van Damme.
I'm going to go Van Damme all day.
Why? What is the moment in the movie where, for you, Fender rose above?
Just when the first pillage scene.
The first pillage scene. You said right then and there.
Right then and there. I'm like, anytime you have a villain kill a kid, you're just like, okay, I hate this guy. And then how he sold it, how he did everything was very, very like, this guy is, like, he was in his role.
Yeah.
Even though he's a surfer, he was in his role.
Okay.
And later on with the well thing, where he goes, if you hold on to it, they'll live.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that is, that's like.
So that's the moment right there.
It's like Jason Isaacs and Patriot goes, burn the church.
Yeah.
You're just like, what?
Okay. All right. That's fair. At least you defended it. I appreciate that. So what's the moment for you where Van Damme rises above Fender?
Like I said, it's the fight scenes in general. He grabs out the gun right off the bat. He shoots the one guy, gets taken away. He still dispatches, makes happen what needs happen. The guy pulls out the knife and he's doing all his blade work. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to fight this guy for real. You know,
right.
He has a chance to pot shot Fender. Doesn't.
That's the moment then.
I mean, like, legitimately all of that there is like, we are going to fight this revenge. This revenge is real. Even to the point where, again, I said to my wife, I was like, I hope this movie is 80s enough to where she, oh, there she goes. But like when he puts the clothes back on her and everything, you legitimately get that. Here it is. This is for real revenge, for real, for love.
Okay.
And I think that was there.
I think those are both legitimate reasons. He was legitimately, Fender was incredibly menacing and a great villain and intense. Sometimes in these kind of movies, all I want is some actual intensity.
You have to be like a good villain.
Don't be like sleepwalking through the movie.
Oh,
so that was great. But also, when I was thinking about this, Van Damme does so much more fighting than Fender does in the movie, right?
Sure.
As far as from a performance standpoint, he had to do a lot more heavy lifting.
Well, as the leader of the baddies,
that's what I'm
saying. Have most people do your fighting for you.
Right.
You only break it out when you got to.
So I always thought it was Fender was the answer to this question, but I'm actually going to go with Van Damme, but there is no wrong answer here. I think anybody can pick Fender.
Except for my answer was righter than yours.
This is my opinion. Ah. It's not an objective truth.
You were the one that gave us the test. So.
Okay.
I've been gone for a month and you guys do me like this?
I think Fender is incredible.
Your mom's incredible.
The moment that, to me, made me think Van Damme was the crucifixion scene.
Sure,
yes. Just the intensity with which he... I haven't seen that out of him in a lot of his movies. And so to me, that was the one that kind of put it over the top for me. But I think Van Damme would be number one for me for that reason. But Fender's like 1.1 and then everybody else at that point.
For me, villains just make action movies.
So oh, absolutely.
If you have...
It's the only reason to watch this movie.
Right. Oh, yeah. So like, I agree a lot with what you said about Van Damme carrying the film, but it's like you look at his later work and he goes up against Powers Booth, Raul Julia, Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah.
You know.
The Van Damme movies that are worth rewatching are always the ones that have the great villain, like Chun-Li in Bloodsport.
Yeah.
Could you imagine?
Chun-Li in Bloodsport. He was in two of his movies. He was in Double Impact and Bloodsport.
Right. The ones that are most worth rewatching are the ones with great villains.
Could you imagine if we actually had a hero movie with no villain? What the heck would it be? You know what I mean? It would be absolutely useless.
Right. Well, and there have been plenty of action movies with crummy villains that you never hear about.
But because what if there wasn't a villain at all?
Maybe the villain is themselves.
Bad movie Daylight with Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
That's what happens when you don't put a villain in the movie.
But
you I
think in the end, I think the movie tried to say this, right?
What?
Is that in the end, we find out that we were the cure all along.
Yeah.
Right, and that's the thing, too. Yeah, the cyborg said or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like maybe he was the cure. Like humanity, that fire, that passion,
yeah.
That's what's going to save
the world. Yeah, it wasn't about just kicking people in the face. Yeah. It was his ability to...
I know.
I know, I'm just saying.
But it's true. It's true. It's a triumph of the human will. I mean, and the best illustration of that is him getting himself off of that cross because it was just sheer will and determination to fight through.
And he kicked the dang thing.
Yeah, it was amazing. And he kicked it. So maybe it's about both. It's about kicking the plague in the face and determination and will.
What if he'd remembered that he had knife boot and he was able to like start chopping at it a little bit?
That's a good point. He could have just knife booted the pole.
So my favorite question. Yeah. Can we still ask this question?
Mm-hmm. Would it be better?
Would it be better with Arnold Schwarzenegger in it?
Schwarzenegger.
No, I wasn't going that way.
Hold on, but 100% it would have been better.
No, it would.
Yes, it would have.
No, it would not.
Listen.
I'm tired of doing this movie. The cyborg.
Yeah.
I was the Terminator. Screw your cyborg.
That's what I'm saying. Thank you, because that's what I was going to say. If the Terminator had been in this movie and it was cyborg versus Terminator, you know how many people went to see this movie?
But the cyborg was a chick with information.
No, but hold on. Everyone went to see the movie, thought that Van Damme was going to be a cyborg.
But what if...
Yeah, it was very misleading.
What if Arnold was the cyborg?
That he had to escort to Atlanta.
Right.
Van Damme Arnold team-up movie.
You're trying
Could
to
you
replace
imagine?
Van Damme. That's just silly.
I'm not trying to replace Van Damme. I'm saying Schwarzenegger.
Guys.
If you added Schwarzenegger as Fender would have been great.
Could you have imagined?
I has water.
In 1989, not now, it's too late. But in 1989, a Van Damme Arnold team-up movie?
Explosions. I don't think there was enough money.
That budget,
in the world at the time.
Yeah, actually, Arnold's been known to, like, if he likes something, he'll do it for less than no money.
Well, in 89, this is the year before he did Total Recall. He had just done Predator. I mean, he was right in the middle of his...
Did you know, there's a picture out there. Did you know Van Damme was supposed to play the Predator?
Well, he did play him.
And he was in the Predator suit.
He played him for, like, a week before he quit.
Yeah,
he couldn't stand being in the suit. Van Damme was in the Predator
picture of Van Damme putting... It's not the Predator that the big, tall Jamaican guy plays.
No, it's the...
It's this weird lizard-looking thing.
Well, that's before they knew what it was going to look like. He was filming the scenes where you could kind of not see him jumping around and stuff. Yeah, that was Van Damme.
I always thought that was pretty...
Before anybody knew who he was.
So you did get Van Damme.
But I'm talking about, you know... As a protagonist, as dual protagonists in a team-up movie.
The silver screen couldn't handle all that.
What if they were both the bad guys?
The videotape would explode once you put it in your VCR.
Destroyed VCRs across the country.
Be kind, rewind, blow up.
No one could ever watch. Maybe it exists, and no one just has ever been able to see the movie.
People have watched it, and they died. Their heads exploded because nobody's told us about it.
Spontaneously combust like a can open a microwave.
That's right. Somewhere out there. It's like the Wu-Tang Clan album that only one exists, and they keep selling it to each other for like millions of dollars.
Yep.
There's one copy of a Van Damme Arnold movie out there. Somebody owns it, but no one can ever talk about it.
That would be a good movie for like an adventure film of a bunch of nobodies trying to retrieve the
Arnold.
Untitled Van Damme Arnold team-up movie.
And then Arnold and Van Damme only have to be enough cut together to look like the trailer of it.
Yes. And that's they only do a trailer together.
But they only do the voice. Like, that's people are watching it, but you never get to see it. So you only get the dialogue back and forth so they could actually do dialogue.
We made the movie.
Let's do it. We're going to make the movie. And if we can't get Van Damme or Arnold, we have a sound alike we can use.
That's
fine. Well, guys, I appreciate you coming and talking to this, talking about Cyborg with me. It's a movie definitely that I've loved for a long time, and I was thrilled that it held up upon rewatch. So many of these don't, so I was legitimately scared when I turned it on. I said, I think I'm about to ruin a part of my childhood. But I think it still holds up, so I appreciate you guys coming out and talking about it.
It was good. It was enjoyable. I definitely have to watch it again.
Yeah.
So
give it another watch. Give it another watch. Fully appreciate this movie. And if you haven't seen it and you've listened all the way to the end, can we just slow things down for a second and talk to you, the listener? What's the matter with you? Honestly, I'm worried about you. You just sat through this entire podcast all the way to the end and you have not seen Cyborg. Are you a crazy person? Are you a sadomasochist? Do you like pain? Why would you sit here and listen to the three of us talk about a movie about a futuristic plague starring a professional surfer and Jean-Claude Van Damme, and you've never seen it? I love you. I love that you're here listening, but you are out of your mind.
Go watch it now.
Go watch the movie.
Yes.
Now you have to. You have to watch it. You went through this entire episode. Go watch Cyborg. They're about to make a good $12 off
spoilers.
People.
No,
Amazon's going to... Oh, that's right. If you got an Amazon,
Amazon Prime,
at least
free,
at the time that we recorded this.
It was on something else as well.
Pluto. Yeah. I watched it was on Pluto TV. For free.
Yeah.
Commercial.
So at least at the time of this recording, it was free. Go watch Cyborg. Now you have no excuse. In the meantime, tune in to Bad Movies Rule. We're going to have another episode out next Friday. Every Friday, we have a new episode. And so the next episode is going to be our first Leslie Nielsen movie we've done on the podcast, Spy Hard. So will you join us next week for Spy Hard? For Clint Bush and Bob Hauser, I'm James Hauser. Thank you for listening. We love you guys. You rock.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.